Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, April 29th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday. We are halfway through the week, which is always a good thing. It is 51 degrees and partly sunny here in upstate New York. So that is definitely a bonus. I saw by this weekend we're going to be in the 70s. And my front garden is popping with all kinds of flowers. No flowers on them yet, but at least leaves popping through the ground. So that means that we are finally over that hump. I think spring has sprung and is firmly entrenched up here, which makes me smile. Yes, the energy level is up. I actually have been quite productive in my downtime, at least some days. This weekend I was. So where do we leave off? Yesterday, God, I always forget. It's like once the show's over, it just mind wipes. Actually, there was a problem with the FTP yesterday. So if anyone was looking for the show immediately following the show, it did not go up until later in the afternoon once it finally pushed to the server. I don't even remember what I called it. Oh, big business and government with new surveillance powers cometh. That's what it was. We looked at the new surveillance bill, the cybersecurity, so they're calling it bill, that got cut out of the broadcast on Monday because somehow I mysteriously muted without ever touching anything for about 8 minutes. And it was a pretty disturbing read considering what they are suggesting back, I don't know, probably 3-4 months ago. We, of course, had the spate of hackings all over. Oh, no, the hackers are coming to get us. And Obama declared on the tail of that that we have a hacking problem, and so we need to get more draconian and connect businesses to the federal government so businesses can then report you to your local NSA office if they see any fishy activity, as well as scoop anything and everything in your communications, regardless of whether or not it has anything to do with the case, because their ass is covered by this new bill. It had gone through the House of Representatives. There were actually two bills, and they are now sitting combined to be discussed and voted on by the Senate. So I guess we'll see. It's way worse than anything we have now. So, hey, as we march forward, things are not looking too good. Holy crap, I just went to the YouTube to catch the title of whatever I titled the show yesterday. And, you know, once the video's done playing, there's always thumbnails that appear, you know, for next up suggestion. And out of the, let's see, 4, 8, 12 thumbnails, 10 of them are the Before the First Cup thumbnail. You roll over each one and you see all my crazy titles. Actually, they're pretty funny. I never saw that before. All right, my amusement is over. So what we're going to talk about today, as the Cyber March marches on, we looked at a few different things over the last few days. We looked at car hacking, those new tools that hackers have to hack your keyless entry system on your car. I mean, we've known from the very beginning the internet was never, ever developed with security in mind. You know, they act like this is a big fucking surprise, and it's not. We've known since day one that there was no security. I remember when they first decided to do online banking, and they're like, oh shit, it's all clear text when you're typing passwords. So if you connect to your banking website and type in your password, any hacker with some basic knowledge would be able to sniff that connection and capture your password. So that's where SSL kind of came in. SSL with encryption, you know, we've gone up a few levels. I think it started at 56-bit. Then they hit 64, the 128. I think that AES now is at 256-bit, and it might even be better, bigger. I think I've seen 1024. It protects you somewhat, but remember, you know, some of these underground services like Silk Road and whatever, they have mentioned before that, oh, you're safe. We use this encryption, the peeling the onion for, I don't even remember what that's called, the service that they use through the dark web. But that's not going to protect you either. And the reason for that is don't think that our alphabet agencies didn't have something to do or a finger, a toe stuck in the water for developing encryption. So, you know, anyone, like when Silk Road went down and then it turned around and they came back and they're like, oh, we're back up again. Everyone come back and buy drugs on Silk Road. I was like, ding, 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 ding. Don't go back there. You know, and then, of course, we find out that, yeah, they had the keys all along. I think that it's that way across the board. There's nothing today that is secure unless it's old school. And even lock and key, burglars can use pick kits and pick a lock. So there is just nothing that is secure. All right, I think we're going to start looking at some mad science gone mad today, because over the last week or so, I've had some pretty funky stories. I wonder what that is. Oh, the death gadget. I've had some pretty funky stories that I've posted here that we haven't touched on at all. So let's look at some of this. I don't know. Here, we'll hit this. You want to worry about drone kills. You know, there's all kinds of stuff going on in robotics, automation, UAVs, micro robots that can carry like 100 times its weight. I mean, this stuff is the type of stuff that keeps me up at night. One of these days, we're going to find very shortly here drones flying in the skies with all kinds of new technologies, not only for identification, but for taking people out. We'll find drone motherships. I mean, they're already doing that in the ocean. I know that there was a DARPA RFP a while back where they wanted to have like these, they literally were calling them motherships to host all these drones that they're planning on dropping into the oceans. Here, let's see. Might as well kick this off with a clip instead of me blabbing away for an entire hour. Yeah, join call. Here we go. Hey, look at that. It actually worked. All right, this is out of RT. I'm going to jump ahead because I hate that woman's music that sounds like Saturday Night Live. Hold on. Back the truck up, Chuck. All right, this is called Kill Switch. It's actually the Army's new acronym for death gadgets. They're using things such as iPads to be able to dial up on the fly a bombardier to come blow somebody up within seconds. So, hey, this is great. It's great news. Here we go.
Like, I'm a really educated, socially ingenious denizen ending nonsense terrifically. I'm the president. See how dumb that is? That's what a lot of people do to make cool acronyms. So I came across an acronym recently and I was like, I know that's made up of some nonsense. And I was right. But then when I learned what it does, I realized it's some scary nonsense. The acronym in question is KillSwitch. It's a new Android tablet made by another acronym, DARPA, and it stands for, ready for this? Kinetic Integrated Low-Cost Software Integrated, again, Tactical Combat Handheld. That makes no sense, and I hate it. But what it does, I hate even more. Because what it does is, it allows soldiers on the front line to order up airstrikes like a freaking pizza in just a minute. For years, American Joint Terminal Attack Controllers, or JTACs, another acronym, used to have to rely on radios and paper maps to coordinate their soldiers with the Air Force to order up an airstrike. But with KillSwitch, now they can do it in 4 minutes. KillSwitch has been in use by our military for a while now, but this is the first time it's been integrated with the Air Force. Now, these KillSwitch tablets can interface directly with a warplane's tactical system. So if you're on the ground and you know you got some quote-unquote bad guys in front of you that are gonna obliterate you, you can pick up your KillSwitch and just be like, hey, Air Force, please drop a bomb out of the sky right here at this precision point. And it works really well. DARPA just tested the system out in New Mexico, and it performed precisely as it was supposed to.
Good old New Mexico, man, they're batting 1,000. You know, I don't know. I always had like this affinity for New Mexico after I visited there in the early 90s. And after all the horrible things that happened with the police department, and some Anon in chat dropped me a good story about Albuquerque with the killing of that homeless man that was camping on the hillside that we're going to look at a little bit later. New Mexico is like the pit of demons, I'm telling you. Too much DARPA research and killing going on, and, oh, anal probes. I think it is the aliens. All right, let's listen to the rest of this.
In fact, it worked so well that the operation takes 2 minutes less than DARPA anticipated. Now, a lot of people are saying KillSwitch is awesome because it can save the lives of our soldiers on the ground. But obviously, it ends the lives of others, too, precisely and efficiently. You know, the worst part about our military, to me personally, is that it takes advantage of one of humanity's best qualities. That amazing quality some people have, where they're willing to die to protect what they love and what they believe in. Our military takes that and uses it for its own political purposes. That's the absolute worst thing about our military. The second worst thing is all that death it causes.
DARPA.
And the worst thing are all those dumb acronyms. Tonight?
Yeah, she always tries to make it kind of funny. I mean, acronyms, schmacronyms, they don't mean anything. KillSwitch, that means something. Being able to dial up in 4 minutes or less death squads, that's got to be bothersome to everybody, especially now that it's on a mobile device. I was wrong. It wasn't an iPad. It was an Android device going for $29.95 at a Walmart near you. You know, DARPA, I think we need to cut off your funding. That's what I'm saying right now. This is not good. Look, my eye just started twitching. Oh. Now, there was another one that came out right around the same time. This is a day or two later. Morphing wings allow drones to keep flying through midair collisions. So, yes, you can't even collide with these suckers and make them die. And that's kind of been one of the things I got to figure out is how we can make these suckers die in midair. But check this one out. We're going to talk about
Amanda Stowers.
We're going to talk about robots here and some pretty crazy genetic engineering that's going on. So figure this will set it off, set the stage pretty well. Here we go.
Amanda Stowers is beating up on her drone as her professor, David Lentink, watches on with glee. It may seem cruel, but it's all in the name of science. No matter how hard or how many times Amanda hits the drone's wing, it always recovers and keeps on flapping. Stowers says that even drones equipped with advanced sensors can't avoid the inevitable. At some point, they'll fly into something.
As much pre-processing and sensors as you can do, you might still occasionally hit things, and this can be quite detrimental. So if you can be robust to hitting something, you can potentially go into a more risky environment.
Environments like the inside of a structurally damaged building after an earthquake as part of a search and rescue operation.
Uh-huh.
Currently, drones are designed after helicopters or fixed-wing planes, both of which cannot sustain mid-air impact. The team wanted to develop a mechanism that could take a beating and maintain flight. The answer came in the form of a bird's wing, which, much like a human arm, has joints to give it flexibility. Lantink says mimicking nature is easier said than done.
So I think one of the big challenges in studying birds and applying that in technology is making the translation from what you find in nature to something you can actually build in a lab.
But they overcame the challenge.
You know, the disturbing thing is what he just said, finding something in nature and then trying to rebuild it. That's exactly the modus operandi that the powers that be are doing. I mean, they're going across the board, and we're talking not only drones. Let's go all the way down to synthetic biology. They are hijacking Mother Earth and everything on it. They're copying, stealing designs, and then turning them into these awful creations. And, I mean, yeah, of course, they're going to sell this to go rescue people inside of a fallen building. But this is not the video that I saw last week. This is the same drone, different video. In the video that I saw last week, they were actually showing these being shot off of some sort of cannon unit out the back of a pickup truck, and they were shooting them into the air in a war zone. And these things were colliding with airborne projectiles and being knocked off course and turning around and bzoop, coming right back and continuing on. I mean, it was very, very frightening. Made my palms start sweating. All right, here, we'll hear the rest of this.
Key, says Stowers, was designing their drone to flap like a bird. A bird's flapping motion creates a centrifugal force that keeps it flying even after it collides with something, recovering in a fraction of a second over the course of a single wing beat. David Lentink says that having wings that can change shape has other advantages as well.
The most important thing about being able to change your shape in flight is that every flight speed, every maneuver has a different shape that's optimal.
An optimal shape means better efficiency, allowing drones of the future to maneuver in cluttered environments using less energy.
Yes, in cluttered environments, such as sneaking in the back door while you're sleeping and zipping around through your house. I mean, we actually heard about those. Hold on, let me kill this. We heard about some of those micro unmanned aerial vehicles that they're working on that are the size of bugs, robo-bees, among other things. It's just frightening. Here's one that we didn't touch on either. I hate when I have to go back like 2 weeks, but it literally has been 2 weeks. I've been off on other topics and all this stuff's been waiting for me. A company called Scanadu, like Xanadu. Remember that movie, Xanadu, with Olivia Newton-John? Maybe it was a song. Scanadu, the Scanadu Scout, brings the medical tricorder to life. Star Trek-inspired device captures key health signs. Watching Star Trek isn't just a way of passing the time. In fact, one American-based entrepreneur claims that it provides him with an actual business plan. Mathematician and entrepreneur Walter DeBauer was inspired by the experience he and his family endured in 2005 when his son fell 11 meters, which that's pretty high, 33 feet from his bedroom window and received a serious head injury. Together with his wife, Sam, he set up a company, Scanadu, to develop a medical device for consumers' personal use. The Scanadu Scout is a scanning device that links with your smartphone. Now, notice that all of these devices, and they didn't just talk about that in the morphing drone, but I bet you at some point we're going to find out that there's some sort of mobile or smart device connectivity. But in the first one, there was, using an Android device. Well, this one also can link with your smartphone to give you your blood pressure, heart rate, body temperature, and the SpO2, which is your blood oxygenation level, in a matter of seconds. It's like you're getting a physical from Dr. McCoy. De Brouwer, a Belgian now living in California, created a mathematical algorithm, and it all comes back to the algorithm. All this database slice and dice data is all algorithms as well. Google scanning all of the open text to pull out keywords is all being done with an algorithm to decide how your search rankings are for your web page is done with an algorithm. He created an algorithm that converts the body signs to a simple readout on a smartphone. De Brouwer believes that the most revolutionary feature is that it can be used by anyone. Yes, stupid people, we don't need doctors. We'll link it to Watson because Watson is the big brain computer that'll be doing our healthcare. No one will have to think anymore. But you know what? That's a good thing because it'll cut down on the instances of brain cancer. Yes, I said it. I'm going to talk about that story before the end of the show, I promise. People will no longer have to ask, is there a doctor on the plane? But rather, if there's a tricorder, smartphones are being increasingly used to power and connect medical devices, yes, in brackets, to enslave us. And offer a unique way to diffuse technology among a large number of people right around the world. Yes, get a surveillance device in every pocket to be able to surveil us down to our bodily functions. I mean, this, you see the way they're spinning this? Like, what a great thing it is. But think about what you're giving up. And especially when we looked at those robotic spiders back a few weeks ago, with that new Intel chip. I always forget what it's called. Doesn't matter. It's the new Intel chip that's going to be for wearable technologies. And it said that there was a sensor in there that reacted to your bio rhythms. I don't know. How fast you were breathing, your heart rate, and it could determine whether or not you were agitated, disturbed, frightened, and then react to that. That's very scary. You know, we also had discussed, I'll have to find that video. I know I've seen it a few times. Some of the new stuff for the smart cars. And smart cars, I'm telling you, are getting pretty scary. Scary smart cars. We looked yesterday, or maybe the day before, about how they wanted to use DCMA, Millennium, Digital Millennium copyright laws, to be able to prevent you now in the future from being able to work on your car as they dub the car with computers in them, a new mobile computing device. But they want to be able to prevent you from tinkering with any of the hardware or the software, like it's protected. And the whole time while you're in your smart car, that smart car will be able to spy on you, record your conversations, probably can take your heart rate from holding the steering wheel. But shit, if you're in the self-driving car, you won't even have to be holding the steering wheel. It's probably taking your pulse out of your ass cheek while you're sitting on the smart seat. All right, here, let me keep reading. Scanadu has already begun shipping devices to people who backed its crowdfunding campaign on Indiegogo. However, the company will have to wait for FDA approval before the device can go on sale. Scanadu is one of 10 finalists competing in the Qualcomm Tricorder X Prize. So there you go. Put Qualcomm in the list of smart device manufacturers that want to just jump on the train of the New World Order to enslave us with little handheld devices and home robots. I know it sounds crazy, guys, but it's not. Seriously, it's not. Scanadu is one of the 10 finalists competing in the Qualcomm Tricorder X Prize competition. The challenge is entrance to come up with a handheld device that can accurately diagnose 16 health conditions and capture 5 real-time health signs. The winner will be announced in January 2016 and will receive a check for $10 million. How awesome is that? sell humanity down the road and get $10 million. I mean, they just convinced these people that this is great technology that's going to help others, but it's not. This is going to be like Buck Rogers in the 21st century, where we live in our white germ-free environments with no microfibers in the air, all shiny, clean, and smell like bleach with our robot helpers. And the door opens up when it's dinner time and they're bringing us our bug protein 3D printed foods to come get our tricorder reading. You know, I find this very frightening. I don't want to live in a dystopia. You know, I don't want to be wearing an Apple Watch that can be 24/7 broadcasting my vital signs to who the fuck knows where. You know, while I was doing news this morning on my computer upstairs, I had AVG pop a little box in the corner of my computer that says AVG has detected that computer, Jules, has connected to an unknown network. And then there was a little link that said learn more. I'm like, okay, who is my computer connecting to that I don't know? So I click on that link. And the learn more link just gives me this whole blurb about, well, there are networks that are connected that are known, and there are networks that are connected that are unknown, but it never told me who it was. There was no way for me in that little pop-up to determine who I was connecting to that was unknown. And that was the end of that. What do I do? So it alerted me. Great. Thank you. And they're probably sucking down every bit of personal information I have on that machine, which is why then probably my machine goes on syrup mode as they're downloading everything. But, you know, I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg. Think about the amount of data and the amount of control over you in particular they're going to be able to have as they get to the cellular level. Which brings me to this next story. Out of Discover Magazine, Mad Science Gone Mad, a world's first. Scientists genetically modify human embryos. You knew it was coming. I'm going to tell you what, though. I know they say this is a world's first. I'm going to beg to differ. We found out, and we can, I don't know, it was probably from 2012. Hold on. Keywords were like lab and Shamira. And I think there were over 200 of them. And I think it was in the UK. They were human-animal hybrids. Yes! 2013, human-animal hybrids. Shamiras with mice, pigs, and goats. So, I mean, to be able to make a Shamira and mix a human embryo with cows or goats or spiders or mice or whatever the hell you want, that's going to take modifying a human embryo. So like I said, I'm going to beg to differ to say that this is the first genetically modified human embryo, though this may be the first that's just human cells and not mixed with some sort of freaky creature. All right, let's take a look at this. All right. Discover Magazine from April 22nd, 2015. In a world's first, scientists genetically modify human embryos. Chinese researchers have officially taken science into some uncomfortable territory. Researchers at Sun Yat-sen University in Gangsha have edited the genomes of human embryos, Nature has reported in an exclusive on Wednesday. The study, which was published in the journal Protein and Cell, confirms rumors that some scientists were conducting these ethically dubious experiments. Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. It's like they're calling this out as the first ever. I'm telling you here, I'm going to drop the main search I just did in Google into chat if you want to see what I'm talking about. I mean, they've been working on this for a couple of years now, doing all kinds of crazy shit, mixing human embryos with all kinds of stuff. But yes, ethically dubious is a good way to put it. Ethically dubious experiments. The report has scientists sounding a warning call as reported in Nature. Quote, and you know what? They're using that system that Hecti had actually dropped me a bunch about using the CRISPR-Cas9. It's a software that allows them, just like programming code, to be able to look at the genetic code. And we'll look, actually, there's a story that I found, oh my God, 6-8 months ago, got lost in my feed, and I saw Drew Lamb found the same story and posted on the WTF page a couple weeks back. There's an entrepreneur in California that is literally allowing people to create their own biological organisms. They give them a computer screen and let them mix and match DNA and create living things. I mean, how insane is that? But it's the software that makes it as easy as using reusable chunks of computer code. I mean, because really, if you look at DNA, that's pretty much what it is. There are cells. I don't even know what they are. Atoms, proteins, maybe. That's what's in your DNA. I think you'd probably consider proteins, lipids. I don't know. Code. Strands of code that have genetic information that goes back millions of years. Lots of it that's not used, but it pretty much is a biological computer. I mean, they've determined that. They can mix and match. So anyway, this is noted in Nature. Quote, I believe this is the first report of CRISPR-Cas9 applied to human pre-implantation embryos. And as such, the study is a landmark as well as a cautionary tale, says George Daly, a stem cell biologist at Harvard Medical School in Boston. Yes, where they're doing all kinds of Frankenstein science. He's probably afraid because they beat him to the punch. Their study should be a stern warning to any practitioner who thinks the technology is ready for testing to eradicate disease genes. Mixed results. In the study in question, researchers attempted to replace the gene responsible for a potentially fatal blood disorder called B, I don't know, it's one of those Greek Bs, beta thalassemia. They used a gene editing technique called CRISPR-Cas9 on a non-viable single-celled human embryo, and this technique allows researchers to snip and splice DNA at desired locations. The experiment, unfortunately, was not very successful. Nature reports that of the 86 embryos the researchers started with, only a fraction successfully had the problematic gene replaced with a normal copy. And the CRISPR-Cas9 approach also introduced new mutations into other unintended places in the genome. Of course it is. Because you know what? We think we're gods and we're not. I mean, God, you guys, I mean, regardless of what your belief of abortion is, they had 86 fucking human embryos that could have potentially been another human being that they were cutting up in a petri dish. And out of how many did it say? 86. Only a fraction. So they didn't give you a number. I mean, they Frankensteinized them. The Isle of Dr. Moreau times 10,000 fold. I mean, eventually when they get this technology all worked out, I've joked about them being able to give you a set of wings. But guys, that's what this is. X-Men. Magneto. You know? I mean, this is crazy shit. This should not be allowed. I vehemently disagree with being able to genetically engineer humans. And then are they even humans anymore? I mean, that's the ethical question. And how ethical is it to take living human beings? And I mean, it depends on when you say life begins. I've had quite a full 360, well, maybe 180 view of my view of life in embryos over probably the last 25 years. I think a lot of what's happening in the world today is the fact that we've been conditioned to find everything as disposable, including life. Life is not fucking disposable. Life is an absolute miracle. You know, I know there's science behind it, and actually I think I read a story a month or so ago where they were doing some experiments with different elements that they find on comets. And in a laboratory, they actually think that they may have found the correct combination as to how life could have started on the fly out of nothing here on Earth, which is pretty interesting. I mean, just like anything, when your science hasn't caught up yet, it always looks like magic. But once you find the science behind it, then it's like, oh, yeah, it was that easy. But still, if you look at, not just in humans, in any creature that reproduces, and the fact that when you look at all, and I'm not going to say plants, but let's look across even mammals, reptiles. I'm trying to think of what else. I guess, yeah, even birds. Are burps considered mammals? I don't think they are, because birds don't have teats. I don't know, guys. It's early. I've only had like one quarter of a cup of coffee. But if you look at embryos, I was showing my daughter the one day because she didn't believe me. If you look at embryos across the animal spectrum, us included, how amazing is it that we all look so similar in the first couple weeks? We all have tails. We all have that weird, like, curly thing going on, big bulgy eyes, before we start having distinguishing characteristics. And what are the chances? What are the chances that we're all symmetrical? Or that we all have, like, noses or ears or the ability to, I mean, not all creatures have eyes. I mean, obviously, ones that live underground that don't require light, a lot of them, evolutionary-wise, you know, like voles, let's say, they can't see. I think they're blind. You know, bats use echolocation, that type of thing. But they've all adapted. But how amazing is it that we all have these similar features? We have, you know, across a large gamut, that we are not, I mean, maybe in the very beginning stages of life we were related to, but we've all evolved along our own chains of evolution, but we still retain these similar attributes. I mean, to me, life in studying evolutionary biology and then really getting into biological mechanisms and how our bodies work internally and all the chemical reactions and then into DNA and RNA and how all of it functions together is so extremely fascinating to me. Why would we fuck with that? I just don't understand. I mean, yeah, they always put it under the guise that we're trying to fix disease, we're trying to make you healthy, we're trying to, you know, right the wrongs of history. But remember, it's always about power and control and money. It's never for the common good. I mean, maybe in some very, very limited number of circumstances, you have somebody who has no ego, who is really trying to, like, help cure the world. But remember, there's also always that one person's vision that may not jive with everyone's. And so in the end, even the most benevolent vision could be violating someone else's human rights by trying to force it upon them. All right, let's read a little bit more of this. Troubling precedents. The precedent the experiment sets, however, is what's causing the buzz. One of the biggest concerns about editing human embryos is that any changes made are heritable. Yes, they are passed down through your offspring. In other words, they can be passed on to future generations in a way scientists cannot currently predict. It's why they use fruit flies for a lot of experiments, because fruit flies reproduce very quickly, and so they can watch generational inheritance happen for things that that they've made changes with. But and fruit fly genomes are somewhat close to humans, so actually they're a good test, but I'm not going to trust any mad science gone mad scientist, especially in China, to be coming up with some gene editing therapy that could affect, I mean, honestly, you could make an entire heritage line of freaks from just one embryo, you know, amplified 100 years. It says, in other words, they cannot predict what's going to happen to future generations. For this reason, an alliance of 170 research firms, institutes, and patient groups are calling for a moratorium on genome editing in human embryos, writing, quote, many oppose germline modification on the grounds that permitting even unambiguously therapeutic interventions could start us down a path toward non-therapeutic genetic enhancement. We share these concerns. Now, you know, this was like in your face, stick it all out, genetic editing in a petri dish. But what about this RNAi technology? Is that or is that not fucking with the human DNA? Just not in a so in your face way. You know, giving you an injection that's going to go in and modify your DNA by flipping switches on and off that, hey, we don't know what the long-term effect is going to be passed down to future generations. And we're not doing it on an embryo that has no cognizance at the time being. We're doing it on an awake, alive human being. I would have to say that that RNAi tech should go right in the same boat as this embryo modification. Says, in March, New Scientist called editing human embryos, quote, genetics' new battleground. And Nature News points out that both Nature and Science, the journal, rejected the research papers based on ethical grounds. But unfortunately, it seems the dialogue researchers were calling for has been superseded by the experiments themselves, forcing complicated ethical questions to the fore while data and debate are still lacking. So there you go. And leave it to the Chinese, man. I don't know. I don't think any of this is good, to be honest. You know, Brandon also posted a story the other day. Actually, let's see here. I have a little twitchy eye. It's what happens when I start reading this stuff. Hold on. Oh, here's one out of Scientific American, too, about controversial gene editing approach gains ground. I mean, guys, we really are moving to, like, this new realm. And we have head transplant. You know, they're talking about that crazy shit. And they have their first volunteer. I mean, that poor guy that's volunteering, he probably doesn't look like he has too much time left. He's pretty crippled up. But still, I mean, head transplants, that's like out of some horrifying science fiction movie. I don't even know what to say to that. Give me 1 second. Before I hit the story, I thought there was one more I wanted to hit here, but I guess not. You know, as we move forward here, connecting mind and machine. Actually, here we go. We already looked at drones. Well, here's the next level of drone. And I could just see this on a soldier. Uh-oh. I thought UCY radio was disconnected. Hold on. If I can get this to load, my computer is now doing the, this webpage is not found. We cannot go anywhere at the present time because you said some keywords that prevents us from doing so. So hold on. We're going to say fuck the NSA. Let's go to the other machine that hasn't been polluted yet. Yeah, I'm going to disconnect here. Oh, looky, looky. The other machine's a black screen. Oh, I hate the morning challenges. Like, I'm better at 3 o'clock in the afternoon dealing with major technical issues every time I touch something, but not this early. All right, let's try and get back online. La, la, la. Okay. Now maybe I can find this call somewhere and connect. And here we go. This is the better machine anyway. Now I got to get to the video. Should I do music? Da 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 da. Da 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 da. Oh, let's go. Do 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 do. Oh, well, this one might not work either. Does not look like I am connecting to the call or to Facebook or to anything else. Isn't that amazing? Oh, Jesus. It's just amazing. All right, I'm going to try one more time. No. I don't have it. I can't connect. I can't connect to anything. I can't connect. Do you guys still hear me? I guess that's the other question. Am I still on air? It appears so. Oh, I'm almost hearing something now. Wait, I connected. Oh, how amazing. Wow, that took like 5 minutes. All right, I'm on Skype. Can I get to the video is the question now. And it is almost not appearing. So, well, fuck it. I guess I'm just going to have to read. Guess the videos are all done for today. Oh, but look, it won't go to my stories now either. Well, we brought up Brandon's story before I lost all my connectivity. So let's read this one, The Coming Brain Chip. Yeah, Brandon did do a story on The Coming Brain Chip. Says, interestingly, this is The Coming Brain Chip by Brandon Turberville, UCY host, Monday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, Truth on the Tracks. Interestingly, in 2007, a clip from NBC News has, for some reason, been making the rounds on the internet once again, as if it were being broadcast for the first time. This clip and the accompanying commentary has served to galvanize those reading and listening to it into one of two camps, one that is subject to overhype, clickbait titles, and panic, the other that is firmly entrenched in the American sheep class for whom no bad news or reports of malfeasance is real or anything other than conspiracy theory. Well, Brandon, I hope you're listening this morning because I'm going to tell you there's a third class of people. I don't clickbait or overhype any of this technology. I try to lay it out as straight as I can, looking at it from a technical perspective. And I'm going to say that any amount of quote unquote overhype and panic is not enough for right now. I think that we should be standing with pitchforks and torches saying this has got to stop. And this is the end of biological life as we know it. I don't think that there is any amount of panic that is too much, honestly, especially if you have children. All right. It says, yet while such a report may have caused consternation amongst the general public even as recently as 2007, much has changed in the last 7 years or so. The year 2015 brings a new kind of American, one that is largely unconcerned with anything other than the most basic needs of sustenance and entertainment. While in 2007, Americans who were willing to engage in ruling class and to engage the ruling class in ideas of microchipping humans were still a distinct minority, the 7 years after the report has seen a major increase in the population of individuals who are indeed willing to consider the possibility. And yes, there was some sort of research poll done very recently as well that had shown a large number of Americans would be more than willing to merge with the machine. Now, if that's not frightening, I don't know what is, but it is going to be like zombies. I mean, if you are not assimilated, they will assimilate you. And I mean, when we've seen some of these mini ultra drones as well that could potentially fly into your house unbeknownst to you and shoot some sort of chip dart into your neck. I mean, that actually was in one of those Department of Defense videos. It's kind of a frightening thought. It says, but while those actually concerned about the idea of a microchipped population are often bombarded with misinformation, such as rumors that the AHCA contains provisions to forcibly implant microchips, that must be the Healthcare Act, which I do remember seeing that document that had mentioned the microchips as part of the plan. Indeed, not only does the technology exist, it is currently being implemented. The goal is to gradually expand the frequency and ubiquity of such technologies until it becomes the norm and eventually a procedure enforced by law. And I'm going to completely 100% concur. We have already looked at that. I mean, this whole healthcare push right now that we were looking at before, whatever they were calling it, the new tricorder, where they'll be able to read your vital signs, those Apple iWatches that'll be able to read vital signs. There was another one that was just a vital sign reader that could track your movements, your steps, your blood pressure, your oxygen levels. I mean, all that stuff is already happening. It may not be embedded under the skin, but hey, that's what vaccines are for. And they could do it at a nano level if they wanted. And people aren't afraid of it because it's going to be sold to you as a benefit. Also, biometrics are already being used. The video clip mentions the video clip mentioned above is focused entirely on the concept of biometric methods and microchipping being used for purposes of identification and financial transactions. And actually, this may have come out because I asked Brandon to really hop back on biometrics. He had done quite a number of stories. We had looked at India having 2.1 billion, if I'm not mistaken, people already on their cashless society biometric ish type system. I don't know if they were literally using some sort of chip or a card. I believe it was a card. It says, as the report mentions, forms of biometrics identification for payment and ID have been used for years with relatively warm reception amongst the general public, despite the fact that the majority have yet to join the bandwagon. And the way they've gotten the public to jump on the biometrics bandwagon, and they're really pushing for it for now, Windows 10, because that's how they're going to use it to authenticate you. They want to get rid of anonymity on the internet and use some of your biometrics as a password. And they sell it to you as, you know, those pesky passwords are so hard to remember with your puny little brains. So this is going to make it so much easier for you lazy Americans. Let's see really quick now. I'm going to try joining this call again. Hold on, I got to hang up over here because now I'm lost on that machine. Let's go back here and let's see if we can play this clip that that Brandon has embedded. Welcome to the year 2017.
Special coverage here tonight, life in the U.S. in 10 years' time. By that time, there may be all kinds of new ways to safeguard and identify all those things that make each of us unique, our faces, even our fingerprints, even our eyes. Here now with more on the future of technology, NBC's Tom Costello.
The year is 2017. You're rushed to a hospital, unconscious with no ID or medical history. But thanks to a microchip under your skin, it's all there. Science fiction 20 years ago, but a biometric reality today.
The technology is based on answering one simple question. Am I who I say I am?
Already, fingerprints and iris scans verify passenger identities at airports. Within 10 years, that technology may be even more widespread. And look for more complex facial recognition programs that scan a crowd of thousands looking for a single terrorist.
Today's facial recognition software starts with the eyes. Then it maps out the contours of the face and compares that against a database of millions, a database that's growing by the day.
What's next? At the University of Bath in England, researchers predict big changes for consumers.
I think it is possible to free us completely of our wallets and keys using biometric technology, if that's what people want in 10 years' time.
In fact, it's already here. The latest home security locks use fingerprints to control deadbolts. And at the Jewel Osco grocery store in Chicago, some customers pay using their fingerprints. No paper or plastic.
You don't really need anything other than your hand, and you already got that with you.
So will future department stores scan our irises, like in the movie Minority Report, then offer products catered to who we are?
Hello, Mr. Yakamoto. Welcome back to the Gap.
Experts say that technology is here now. The challenge is to safeguard our privacy in a brave new world. Tom Costello, NBC News, Alexandria, Virginia.
And what's crazy about that clip is from 2007. That stuff's all happened already. You know, that's already in the background on the QT working. Some of that, you know, the facial recognition, I'm sure that there's bazillions of faces in that database now. And we also have seen some of the advertising that's been going on, even with beaming messages into your head. I mean, we looked at that a while back. As you walk past like a store window, they are able to identify you, and whether it be through facial recognition, or there are also ways like with Bluetooth on your phone, they'll advertise to you directly based upon your preferences. But there was the one that, I don't remember. I think it was in Europe, where when you're on a bus, it was beaming like advertisement voices into your head talking to you. If you put your head on the glass, it was very, very, very freaky. There have been experiments done with that. And we just heard the other night, listening to that episode from Michael Cross with that Dr. John Hall that I mentioned yesterday, that he's been talking about them, the CIA doing that stuff for years using ELF, I believe he said. It's pretty nuts. So anyway, I'm almost out of time and I can't even believe this. And Brandon's stories are always really long and I'm not going to have time to read this. And there's actually another video. So you know what? We're going to save the rest of this. This is where we're going to start tomorrow. I want to go to a story that we never made it to yesterday. And this one isn't too long. If I can get there. Okay. So here we go, people. We have all this stuff going on. We have all this technology that is usurping our freedoms from the macro to the micro level. I mean, we've looked at the nanotech. We've looked at all the potentials in the future for that and how we could really, I mean, once those suckers get into your body, there's not much we're going to be able to do. And we have these people that are just la, 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 completely distracted. Addicted to their dopamine induced trances that all these smart devices and television give them. They're selling all this technology with the promise that it's going to make you healthy, make you safe. We're looking out for you. And here comes a study from April 27th. Thinking, yes, thinking, can fuel the growth of brain tumors, study finds. So God forbid, we better stop thinking. Otherwise, you might end up with a brain tumor. I mean, literally, is that what they're saying? And how many dumb people, and I mean, there may be research showing this. I read the story. I could blurb through this really quick. And there might be some evidence of that fact. But you would think that over the evolutionary scale, that if thinking caused mass amounts of brain tumors, then wouldn't the majority of the human population historically so be dead? Because I would have to say so. Says thinking helps fuel the growth of deadly brain tumors, according to a surprising new study out of Stanford University School of Medicine. The study, which was recently published in the journal Cell, found that tumors actually use nerve activity in the cerebral cortex, i.e. thinking, to promote their own growth. Researchers observed high-grade gliomas, a deadly form of tumor that starts in the brain or spinal cord and makes up roughly 80% of all malignant brain tumors. Currently, the treatment options for high-grade gliomas are very limited. And guys, we got about 30 seconds left. I don't know how I run out of time every day, but hey, that means tomorrow we have all kinds of fun stuff to kick the show off with. It is Wednesday. Make sure you guys stick around. We have Josh up live at 6 p.m. Eastern. Continual Condition with the boys from New York at 8. Truth or Talk from This Week at 9 and Antimedia Radio and Nick and DB at 11. The guys asked me yesterday if I could run before the first cup in the 5 o'clock slot, so I'm going to try to do that today. And you guys have an awesome Wednesday, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Have a good day.